Welcome to Series 2 of the Social Care Podcast, Sharing Stories, with me, Audrey Moore, and David Bagnall, a.k.a. Baggy.
This podcast is for the benefit of anyone working in or studying social care. We like to chat with interesting people in the social care world and hear their stories.
So today we want to welcome back Emily McIlarney, who was one of our guests during the Social Care Ireland conference. Emily, it's wonderful to have you back. Emily works for TUSLA and she's here today to talk to us about the MEHL programme. So Emily, you're a social care worker, isn't that right?
That's right, yeah. I started working for TUSLA earlier this year and it's a new role that they'd advocated for in TUSLA for quite a while. The role is Lead MEHL Practitioner. So yeah, I work a lot with MEHL and I just thought, in other organisations and other roles that I've worked in, I had never really used MEHL, even though it's open to any organisation. So I thought it might be a nice one for us to talk about in terms of, you know, just another useful tool for social care workers that are working with families.
Absolutely. So take us back to the start. What exactly is MEHL for anyone who doesn't know?
Okay, so MEHL is part of TUSLA's Early Intervention, Prevention, Partnership and Family Support piece. So it's a tool that's used when you're working with families, and it's particularly useful for families who are involved with lots of different agencies and where there's complex needs going on. What's particularly great about it is it's completely parent-led. It's parent and child led. So if it's appropriate for the child to be really involved and to have, you know, their voice heard, then we really welcome that and really encourage that. But, you know, sometimes if the child's very young, they mightn't be able to do that. Or if, for example, if the child is nonverbal, it might be more difficult. But that said, we do always look for creative ways of having the child's voice included in the MEHL. So what it is basically, at the very beginning, I suppose, what the word MEHL means, it's an old traditional kind of like a ritual around harvest time. So when communities had a big harvest and maybe a family wasn't able to bring the harvest in themselves, a MEHL would be organized within the community, which would basically bring everyone in together to help with the harvest. So this was the idea behind TUSLA's MEHL program. And it's around really bringing everyone together, getting everybody around a table to work with the family on the needs that the family themselves have identified that they would like help with. And that's really important. So it's not a case where it's a bunch of professionals sitting around saying, this is what you need to do. It's more about families themselves saying, we're struggling a bit with this. We need help. We think we might need help from a few different people rather than one particular agency or person. And how can we do that? How can we access all those people in a way that means you don't have to go around the houses, you know, calling to different agencies and knocking on different doors. So it all fits in with TUSLA's strategy of there's no wrong door for a family to go into. They go in one door looking for help. They can access help from many different places that way.
Can I ask a question on this? I've never worked with this system myself before, but I've done a lot of family conferencing.
Yeah.
And it sounds a lot the same. So what kind of separates it from family conferencing?
It's very similar. It's a very similar idea. I suppose what MEHL does is it gives you the framework there. So, for example, if organizations aren't familiar working with family conferencing, they can download all the MEHL tools off our website and just go with it. So there is a training also. So anybody can do the MEHL training and get trained up as a lead practitioner. And that just gives them, you know, the useful tools, guidelines, and a bit of a toolkit to working in this way with families. But it is very, very similar to family conferencing. And a lot of organizations work in this way anyway. This just provides a framework and a kind of an easy to use toolkit around it.
So could you give us an example of when this has been very useful? Like this podcast is all about sharing stories. And I know we want to maintain the confidentiality of clients and that sort of thing. Would you have maybe a little example of how it's been used effectively?
Yeah, sure. So like a lot of the families we would work with and that I've personally worked with, a lot of the families would have children with additional needs. And then in, I suppose, the climate that we're living in the moment, a lot of families might have housing issues as well, or difficulties around housing. So if you take the example of a family, let's say they have a housing issue, maybe they're in homeless services, or maybe they have housing, but it's not suitable, or it's not meeting their needs. I'll give you an example of one family I'm working with, and the young person has additional needs. And because of the needs the young person has, the bedroom of the home is not suitable for the young person, and they need alternative accommodation. And in this day and age, that can be really difficult. And you need to talk to many different people, and you need to be quite persistent sometimes as well. And let's say, for example, then you might have something else, you know, that happens in lots of families, let's say a marriage breakup. So you'd have parents going through this, children going through this, maybe one of the children has additional needs, and then maybe there's a housing issue as well. So with that, you might be linked into a lot of different agencies, a lot of different professionals. And using MEHL is just a way of getting everyone around the table focused on the child's needs as the child sees it, or as the parent sees it, or both, and working towards those needs. And then there's like a few key people in the MEHL. So the first kind of role you'd have is the chair. And the chair's job is to keep everybody around that table focused on the child and the child's needs. So you know yourself, sometimes we go off on a tangent talking about this and that and go around the houses. So the chair's job is to keep everybody focused and bring it back to the child if the conversation wanders off in a different direction. Obviously, the chair would fulfill all your usual facilitation roles of a meeting as well. And then the lead practitioner, which would be the role that I've worked in a lot, that's a really important role. And that's all about making sure that the family's voice is heard and that we don't move away from that. And sometimes families are really well able to do that themselves, but sometimes they're not. So my job as a lead practitioner would be to build a really strong relationship with family, which is the bread and butter of what we do as social care workers.
Absolutely.
It would be to really understand the needs, but crucially, as they see it, not as how I see it or anybody else would see it, as the family see it themselves, and then work with the family to make sure that that is what comes across in the meetings and that's where the focus is.
From what I know of it, or what I've heard of it, it's kind of based in a local area, and people who attend these meetings tend to work together quite a lot from different agencies. So there's not a lot of strangers walking into the room. There's an understanding, so you can cut out all the red tape, I suppose you'd say, and yeah, get from the introductions and get down to business straight away rather than dragging it out.
Absolutely. And I think really important in that as well is, you know, if you're looking at it from a trauma-informed perspective, you're not asking the family to constantly go through their story, to retell their story, to go through the trauma again. Everybody's informed at the beginning. And that's one of the roles of the lead practitioner is, you know, you collect the information, it's recorded in a strengths and needs form, and the strengths are just as important as the needs. And then that goes to everybody who the parents choose to invite to the MEHL group. And again, it's completely up to the parents who they want to be there. And then they have that information. So the parent is not in a situation, or the child indeed, where they're having to go through, well, this is what happened, this is where I am, this is what I need, this is what I'm struggling with. So from a trauma-informed perspective, it can be a really effective way of working. And to get back to your point there, yeah, a lot of times it is area-based, but also it's not restricted to that either. So, you know, if you have an organization that can help and they're coming in new and they don't really know anyone, that's okay too. All the information is given in forms by the parents. The consent is there to share those forms. So you can kind of read up on it beforehand. And again, you're not putting the family through having to explain or go through the details again. So I suppose there's a lot of work that goes into getting to the meeting stage. A long piece of work there, and a really important piece of work. And that's, you know, all our important social care skills of relationship building, of listening, of meeting the person where they're at. And then only after that very big piece of work comes the meetings. And the meetings will happen every 4 to 6 weeks, we usually recommend, just to keep the ball rolling and keep everybody motivated. The meetings start every time with the actions that were agreed at the last meeting. So there is a real accountability piece here.
Yeah.
And especially for families who, you know, find it really difficult, people will say, oh yeah, we'll do that for you. And then you don't hear from them again for months and months. It can be really effective, you know, getting that little bit of accountability. And sure, look, we're all busy. We're all, you know, we have the family at heart, but sometimes it just can be really difficult to get the things done that we need to get done. And I find anyway, with this Mehl structure, it's really helpful in just everyone turns up to the meeting with their actions complete. And if they're not complete, they have a good explanation why. And then we move on to the next set of actions arising from that.
So sitting in that meeting is the family, the child, maybe somebody else that they want there. And what other professions then? Would it be social work or...
Yeah, it could be anything and everything. So we would have, you know, if we use the example of that family who are having, you know, have a housing issue, we might bring people in from a county council or from a different housing kind of agency. We might have professionals from disability teams, so multidisciplinary, it could be key workers, it could be psychologists, physios, whatever closely aligned to the child's needs. We often have schools. Schools can be a big part of Mehl. And then with kids with additional needs, you might bring in the NCSE as well. So the Special Education Board, and they'd come in and CNOs, the Special Educational Needs Organisers, would often come to Mehl as well. We've had, you know, youth workers, Gardaí, could be anyone, football coaches, GAA mentors, could be anyone at all. Anyone that the family feels could be a good support to them with the need they've identified and who they would like in the room.
That sounds like an awful lot of people in the room. It can it get overwhelming for people, like, to have so many people in the one room?
Yeah, so this is the lead practitioner's role as well. We usually start off small, and we can separate the meeting out. So say we're going to deal with housing in the first part of the meeting. Well, then we invite people associated with the housing issue in first, and then we say goodbye to them. We might invite in others after. So it's all designed around what the parents want and the child wants and the needs. We would never ask a child to sit through all of that. So while we love to have their input, we might bring them in for a few minutes, let them say hello to everyone. If they choose to be there and they want to be there, that's also totally fine. But I like to find lots of creative ways of working with kids through Mehl. So I've had like voice messages on WhatsApp being played into Mehl meetings. I've had TikTok videos the kids have made, but not put up on TikTok. I've had pictures that they've drawn. One child did up a wish list for me of what she wished would happen, and she decorated it beautifully. It was really nice, and we photocopied it and handed it out to everybody. I've had kids, you know, bring themselves into the room by giving their mom or dad a token, something that identifies them, and we sit it on the table in their place then. So we've had teddies, Star Wars figures, footballs, all sorts of things to represent the child.
This podcast is sponsored by Trust Social Care Consultancy. If you want to get in touch with Audrey, please go to www.trustconsultancy.ie. Now back to the podcast.
Something that came up for me once was that we, say, go back, we had a family conference, and there was one person who really needed to be at the meeting, and some of the family didn't want them at it, but they were really needed to sort the issue out.
Yeah.
And there was discussion around whether she should be brought in or not against the wishes and that. Have you ever come up against a situation like that? Does it happen at all often?
Yeah, it can. I certainly have, but I usually find we'd start off, do what we can without that person. If the parent does not want them in the room, they're not in the room. But I find through that relationship piece that we build and the trust that we build together, usually we find a way to work that out. And eventually, you know, once the parent feels trust and feels comfortable and feels respected and listened to, I often find that they'll come to a point where they'll say, okay, you know, we can do this. We can structure it in a way. So if there's specific personal information that they don't want that person to be involved with, then we just structure the meeting as such and we'd invite them in for a portion of the meeting, and they don't have to be there for the whole thing. But I find really the trust, and once a parent feels respected and listened to, that those things usually kind of sort themselves out.
Yeah, well, ours took like 3 or 4 meetings, and I had to show where the gaps were and pointing out that, like, we can't fill that gap. You can't fill that gap. This is the only person that can answer these questions, you know. And it wasn't somebody that was would put the child in danger. It was just someone who wasn't in the mix at the time, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So, Emily, for anybody who's maybe listening to this and is interested in becoming a mental health practitioner, what kind of skills do you think they would need, or what knowledge base would they need to go into a role like this?
Well, this is why I really wanted to do this podcast, because social care workers are perfect for this role. I mean, the only problem is time. And look, time is everybody's problem. We're all stuck for time. But I really feel, you know, that once you've done MEHL even once, you can see that it actually in the long run saves you time, because instead of making 20 phone calls to people and telling the story over again, you're getting everyone around the table and everyone part of this process to meet these needs. So it is kind of work intensive in the beginning, but then it gets, the workload is much less. And I suppose you're kind of all the time working in MEHL to do yourself out of work, because what you really want in the end is that communication is much better and the parent is much more able to advocate for themselves, and you make yourself redundant. Like for me, when I start MEHL, that's my goal, to make myself redundant at the end of the day, and that the parent and the organisations, either the needs are met or the communication is much better after a few meetings and they're able to work away themselves. So to answer your question, I think social care workers are perfectly placed. I actually studied MEHL in college as part of my social care course as a kind of an academic piece, and I did an assignment on it, and then lo and behold, I landed in doing the job. And there's lots about it on the TUSLA website. The toolkit is there, all the forms are there, so you can really familiarize yourself with it before you decide you want to do the training.
So this is really just a tool that any social care worker can use in the course of
any social care worker. And I think that's a bit misunderstood. I think people think it has to be TUSLA. It doesn't at all. Each TUSLA area has something called a CFSN coordinator, which is a child and family support network coordinator. That's your link-in person if you want to start MEHL. So you get onto them, you say, look, I have this situation, I think it might be suitable for MEHL. And they will support you the whole way. If you're not trained to be a lead practitioner, they'll find you a lead practitioner, and they'll find you a chair, and they'll work with you to get this MEHL off the ground. It works best when the lead practitioner has a relationship already with the family. But it can also work, you know, if someone has to be brought in. But it just takes a little bit longer, because that relationship piece is really important to build at first. So, yeah, I think that's one of the big misunderstandings about MEHL. TUSLA don't have to be there, but you always have the support of your CFSN coordinator in the background, who's supporting the lead practitioner to go through the MEHL process.
I was just curious as to how long the training takes to become a lead practitioner.
Yeah. So there's 3 parts to the training. The first part is an online bit that you do yourself. I think it takes about 20 minutes or something. It's not too bad. And then there is an online training, a live online training, which is a day long, I think, or not even, maybe 9:30 to 3. So that's going through the process of MEHL, how it works. It's really good. It's really interactive. You go into breakout groups, you get like a case study, and you work away in small groups at it. So at the end of that training, you'll come out ready to lead your first MEHL. And then there's one more training, and that is, you know, really catching up with everyone, see how they got on, how are they finding applying the model, and any questions or any experiences that anyone would like to share. So it's a 3-part training, really useful. But honestly, all social care workers have the skill to do this. They absolutely do.
And you mentioned earlier the benefits of MEHL, and I've no doubt that is really, really beneficial. But are there any challenges that you come up against on a regular basis, or any big challenges?
I suppose the biggest challenge is, you know, we're getting a load of professionals around a table where the family are giving so much into this, so much in terms of time, so much in terms of opening their hearts and minds to the process. And sometimes there just isn't a quick solution to the problems as much as everybody would like there to be. I suppose waiting lists, you know, for services, getting children assessed for different services around additional needs and disabilities, housing, you know, sometimes there's just very little we can do around housing at the moment. So those are the main challenges and frustrating, you know, and the feedback we get from other lead practitioners is the obvious one is around time and just like, I don't know if I have the time to lead a MEHL. We find that people are kind of worried or afraid to lead a MEHL because they're afraid they won't have the time. But honestly, as I say, I think it saves you time in the long run because instead of making 10 phone calls or sending out 10 emails, you're getting around a table and you're trashing out the problems and working together to find solutions. And look, we know that collaborative working is the evidence-based way and the best way to meet needs adequately. And this really is just a framework to help you do that. But this is something social care workers, it will become very familiar to you very quickly because it's the way we work anyway.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. And it sounds like things are going to start moving in that direction going forward.
Yeah, and it's also, it's an early intervention model. So what we're doing is we're working on these needs early so that, you know, it doesn't get worse for families. So they're not ending up in other situations that are really difficult for them. Yeah. So in that way, you know, it's hugely beneficial.
And it sounds to me like the challenges that you're facing are the same challenges that a lot of other services are having to face as well, such as homelessness. Like homelessness is impacting social care across the sector, as well as access to disability supports and access to assessments.
By all accounts, it sounds like it would link in really well with the assisted decision making and all the current stuff coming up about consent and whatever. People who find it hard getting their voice heard, if this is named for them, then it'd be tools that would work very well together.
Absolutely. And as a framework, the steps that you follow for MEHL that you'll learn in the training include all of that. And participation is such a huge part of it, you know, and it's not participation in a tokenistic way. It is completely parent-led and child-led. So, you know, what the parents say or the child say goes, and that's what we discuss. And it's the chair's job, you know, if people are discussing other things that weren't identified by the family as the issues they wanted to discuss, then they're not discussed. The conversation moves away from it. I'd love to see more social care workers getting on board and using MEHL. I think it's really useful.
Yeah, absolutely. Which college now did you attend?
I went to Blanche. To TU Dublin and Blanchardstown. But yeah, we did a child and family support module and it was part of that.
No, I'm just saying like all these young ones coming up learning all these new things now and what's our fogies not knowing nothing about them.
Sure, I'm an L fogey.
What, Maggie, isn't that what the podcast is kind of all about? Like this is CPD. Anyone listening to this is going to learn about this new stuff and then they can go off the Tusla website and find out more about this. Check out the links in the podcast information below if you want. So, Emily, I'd like to say a massive thank you for coming back on the podcast today. I've really learned a lot from what you had to say there, and I'll certainly be checking out more about MEHL going forward.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me on.
I love the fact of hearing that what I was doing years ago as a family conference has been looked at and changed and has come around in another form for new people, and it kind of freshens it up.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Thank you.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode with Emily talking about the MEHL programme from Tusla. We'd love to ask you for a favour. Please hit the follow button if you haven't already done so. It really helps us to reach more people with this podcast. Also, just to let you know that we have an Instagram account now, the Social Care Podcast, so please go ahead and give us a like and follow. As we've mentioned before, we're open to feedback and comments. You can let us know what you think of this episode by leaving a comment or email thesocialcarepodcast@gmail.com. Next week, we're delighted to have Dr. Brian Penny back on with us, and Brian will be discussing resilience and how we can build our own resilience when we work in social care. That's all for now. Take care.